Thanks for listening to The Sports Beat with Santoria Black, an on-demand audio presentation of RedPeachSports.com and ESPN977.com. Now here's your host, Santoria Black.
Welcome to today's edition of The Sports Beat. Santoria Black here with you. Glad you could join us. We've got a lot to talk about today. We'll talk about some of the bowls and some of the highs and lows of bowl season. We'll also talk to Freddie Murray, the head coach for the Grambling State University women's basketball team, 2-0 in conference play after their swing in Alabama. Both men's and women's teams will host Southern this weekend. Terry Waldrop at 6:30. We'll talk some recruiting as recruiting season is here. First week in February is when recruiting signing day is, so we're going to talk recruiting. It's going to be the first of four parts because we're going to talk to you about from a coach's perspective. We'll talk to you about recruiting from players and parents' perspective, and then, of course, of how the athletic department overall from a compliance looks at it. And then, of course, if we have time, we had a great conversation with Greg Peterson from DudesOnSports.com and talked about college basketball, teams now in conference play, and so how some of those games in the non-conference season could help or hurt some of these teams coming up. All right, 888-993-7762 is the number that you can text into. Got a big announcement. Coming up next week, we will start broadcasting live on Wednesdays at 6 p.m. So we're going to be moving to Wednesdays at 6 p.m. starting next week here on ESPN 97.7. All right, so, you know, a lot of talk has been about Nixon, and, of course, you know, he's now declared for the draft. A lot of people did not agree that he should have played in the game. What about Allen? He was back for Duke after tripping a player for the third time, I might add, and only served a one-game suspension. So there's a lot of different things to talk about of how, I guess you could say, if you looked at the, you know, discipline from a number of different levels, people weren't happy with it. They weren't happy with, you know here you have a running back, obviously issues going on, legal issues, broke the jaw of a woman, and he plays in the bowl game. Now he's declaring for the draft, and then, you know, able to play in the game. I think that's a lot of the question. And then, of course, Allen coming back after a one-game suspension. He was said to be suspended indefinitely, and I guess indefinitely meant that one game. So there's a lot of argument about the discipline that coaches have with their players. And we're not talking about just the running and, you know, all of the stuff that you have to do as far as punishment exercise or anything like that, but we're talking about actual time away from the competitive field or court and actually playing in competitive games. So I guess the question becomes, if you were in charge and had to make that decision with Allen at Duke or Mixon, what would be your decision? How would you have approached that as far as suspension? Would you have allowed Mixon to play? Would you have allowed Allen to play? How many games would you have suspended him for, considering this is a multiple offense type of deal? Would you suspend him for, you know, three games, four games, half the season? What would you suspend him for? Remember, we're not talking about this as a single event or just a single deal, but we're talking about this is, you know, it's happened on multiple occasions. So your opinion, 888-993-7762 is the number to text and to call. And you can go ahead and get us your opinion on that issue. College basketball tonight, Purdue right now on top of Ohio State, 11-10 as they reach the first media timeout. Cal and UCLA coming up a little bit later on. Gonzaga, number 5 in the country, will travel to San Francisco, Utah against Arizona, BYU and St. Mary's, and then Stanford against USC coming up late tonight. All right, you know, bowl season has just ended, you know, and look, I'm not going to sit here and be apologetic or excuse anything that the Big Ten has done, because quite frankly, they've stunk during bowl season. Just terrible. And if I have to choose the worst bowls that happen, you know, I'm not going to look at any of the smaller or mid bowls as some of the worst ones, because sometimes you're going to have that. Normally you're going to put two teams together that normally wouldn't play, so it's kind of hard to gauge that. To me, the Fiesta and Outback Bowl were the worst. And the Fiesta Bowl is number one as the worst. Here's why. 31-0 against two Power 5 teams in a semifinal game. Terrible. Now, you cannot play the results. Everybody says, well, Penn State should have been in it. You can't play the results, because everything up until that point was argumentative about should Penn State get in, should Ohio State get in. That's all argumentative. But when you look at the results afterwards, you say, what happened to Ohio State? Why were they so awful? Or was Clemson just that good? Were they just that good? I think it's a little bit of both. To me, the worst bowl of bowls. I turned that off after before halftime, I think. Kendrick on the other side on the ones and twos. Kendrick, how you doing, man? Outback Bowl between Florida and Iowa. Number 17, Florida beat Iowa 30-3. Look, can you just tell Iowa to stop going to bowls? They haven't been good in the last, what, 6-7 years? The best part of this game was tipped interceptions. Other than that, the game was terrible. Iowa had so many turnovers. They were not able to move the ball offensively. And to me, I can't say that, oh, well, the Miami Bowl or the Alamo Bowl, they were worse or anything. You know, the Alamo Bowl was pretty bad with two top 15 teams in Oklahoma State and Colorado. I think that's right up there in the top three or four. But to have a teams like Clemson and Ohio State and Florida and Iowa, especially those, just terrible. And, yeah, I'm going to put Oklahoma State and Colorado. I'm going to move them actually above the Outback Bowl. Fiesta Bowl was the worst. Alamo Bowl was second. The Outback Bowl was three. And not because of, well, you know, the result with Tulsa and Central Michigan was worse. Yeah, but, again, when you put two teams together during bowl season, it doesn't matter. Sometimes those kinds of things happen because those two teams, they're not looked at as powers. You don't know what you're getting. They could be bad matchup problems, the whole nine yards. But you expect better when you have two power five games like this. And then you had a game of two top 15 teams with Oklahoma State and Colorado, 12 and 8 and 10 respectively, and this game was awful. It was awful. Yes, the Miami Bowl, Beach Bowl was up in there. But again, Tulsa and Central Michigan, I mean, you know, two teams that aren't going to play each other. Where do you put the Las Vegas Bowl? I think Houston, you know, underwhelming at the end of the season. Everybody looked at them as a possible team that could get to the national championship if they would have won out. I was one of them. They didn't. They got drilled by San Diego State 34-10. Vanderbilt didn't do anything to help the SEC's case, getting drilled by North Carolina State 41-17. But, you know, when you look at some of those games, yeah, those are really, really bad. Now, of course, you know, you look at some of the great games, and kudos to Penn State and USC. To me, that was my number one game. When you look at how this game was as far as the major bowls, absolutely. Two teams who had it all on the line. Now, the defensive side of the football, neither team played extremely well. But it was a great game all the way to the finish. And, yeah, I'm going to be a little prejudiced. The Celebration Bowl is pretty doggone good. That was some good TV. 10-9, Grambling winning. You got to put in the local flavor in that. Yes, that was a great bowl. We're going to say that's honorable mention. Orange Bowl was good between Florida State and Michigan. 33-32, the final score there. The Armed Forces Bowl was great with Louisiana Tech and Navy. And I'm going to give kudos to the Birmingham Bowl and the Camellia Bowl, two bowls that don't get a lot of love at times and are looked at as bowls that, should they really be there? Both bowls were exciting. I watched the Appalachian State and Toledo game. It went right down to the finish. Toledo had the lead. Appalachian State had the lead, going back and forth. A Sun Belt against a MAC team. Very good game in the Camellia Bowl. And then, of course, the Birmingham Bowl. And the Camellia Bowl, by the way, is in Birmingham. And then, of course, you look at the Birmingham Bowl, 46-39, South Florida beats South Carolina. Now, you look at this game, it was an overtime game, great game. South Carolina cannot lose this game. They just can't. Sun Bowl was pretty good between Stanford and North Carolina. Even the Texas Bowl was decent, Kansas State and Texas A&M. Indiana even showed up pretty well. Although they lost, they lose to a Utah team ranked number 19 in the country, 26-24, the final there. So there were some pretty good games here, but the awful ones to me, I'm not even, like I said, I'm going to give a pass to a small bowl that has a blowout at times because you don't really have the pick of the litter and everything. But when you have two teams that are expected to do well, that are expected to give you a game, and you get drilled, those games go right to the top. Fiesta, Outback, Alamo, all were horrible, horrible games to watch. And what in the world has the Big Ten done this year? Terrible. Absolutely awful. Michigan lost. It was a tough game, but at least it was a good game. Wisconsin, they were able to win. Ohio State just looked terrible. Nothing happened well for this team in that game. So, LSU, I think they got a big win against Louisville. You know, number 20 against number 13. Big win for the LSU Tigers, and you hope that they can take that and move forward a little bit. But, again, some of the other bowls with some of the Big Ten teams, Minnesota, 17-12 win over Washington State. You know, especially after everything that Minnesota went through with the walkout, with, or I should say the players saying that they were not going to play unless due process was really done. Eventually they played, ended up being a 17-12 ball game. This was, you know, it was going to be, it could have been more exciting. But I think this was about as best as you could ask for considering the circumstances surrounding that game. So that's just kind of my look at what happened with the bowl games. We're going to take a short timeout when we come back. Got Freddie Murray on the other side, GSU women's basketball coach. Talk a little women's college basketball. And, of course, talk about the big series with Southern this weekend. We'll take this timeout. You're listening to the Sports Beat presented by Extreme PH Water right here on ESPN 97.7.
Legal matters are serious business. Don't take the law into your own hands. Trust the professionals at the offices of attorney and counselor at law Ivan J. Diggs. With over 20 years of experience in law, Attorney Diggs can help you battle the big companies as well as represent you in accidents. Don't take the law into your own hands. Trust the professionals at attorney Ivan J. Diggs, attorney and counselor at law located at 309 South Bonner Street in Ruston. Give him a call at 318-254-0400. That's 318-254-0400.
Do you play sports? Do you work outside? Do you walk? Do you jog? Do you cut grass? Do you have activity that causes you to sweat?
And when you sweat, you dehydrate. When we dehydrate, usually we reach for a bottle of water, but now reach for more. Proper hydration is important to your health year-round. When you work, play, or travel, don't settle for whatever is available. You deserve the best high-alkaline, mineral-enhanced bottled water available. Extreme pH Sports Water.
What?
Extreme pH Sports Water contains no dyes, no sugars, no caffeine, no sweeteners, no artificial flavoring. Extreme pH Sports Water is simply the best high-alkaline, mineral-enhanced bottled water you can find. Rehydrate with a great taste. Extreme pH Sports Water contains a plant-derived mixture of calcium, magnesium, and potassium. Now you can rehydrate with a great taste with Extreme pH Sports Water. Extreme pH Sports Water, available at Walmart and other stores near you.
Welcome back to the Sports Beat on ESPN 97.7 and ESPN 97.7.com. Text your questions in at 888-993-7762. Now back to your host, Santoria Black.
All right, welcome back to the Sports Beat, ESPN 97.7. Glad you could join us here on this Thursday. Behave out there. I know it's cold. Don't start calling everybody saying, is there going to be school tomorrow? Yes, it's just raining outside, really. In most of North Louisiana, there's just some flurries as far as rain going on right now, a little sprinkling. But, yes, it's going to be a little cold. But according to most of the folks that we've talked to so far, minimal interruptions. So, yes, kiddies will probably more than likely be going to school tomorrow. All right, joining us on the hotline right now is the head coach of the Grambling State University women's basketball team, Freddie Murray. Coach, how you doing?
How you doing, Santoria? I'm doing great, man. Doing a little tired, but I'm doing great.
You guys should be tired. This is one of those times of the year when the beginning of conference season starts, especially in the Southwestern Athletic Conference. You usually have two games extremely early, and then you play that weekend. This year, it happened to fall on that Monday when you play against Alabama State, then Wednesday against A&M. You get back in the wee hours of morning today, and then this weekend, you only play arch rival Southern.
Yeah, man, four games in 7 days. It's brutal to start the conference off. But, you know, we knew it was coming around, and we're doing what we have to do to kind of rest the girls and make sure that they have their legs for each and every game. So we'll be fine moving forward.
Coach, when we start looking at some of the games, first of all, in the non-conference season, you had a tough schedule. This was a schedule that you guys knew you were going to be challenged. You had a chance to pick up a win against ULM during the non-conference season, and then against Southeast late. But when you looked at that non-conference season, you guys really got a lot of challenges, but you had a chance to look at your personnel to see how they would match up against some of the other schools, especially teams like Fordham. You guys only lost by six in that Thanksgiving Day tournament.
Yeah. Like I said, the team coming in on paper was loaded. Actually, when the season started, we lost a couple players because of academic issues. And so we had to kind of readjust ourselves and kind of, you know, put people that were going to play certain positions having to play other positions. So it took a little while starting out the season. But we've gotten adjusted. I'm blessed to have, you know, the bulk of the same team back from last year. So regardless of the other players that wasn't able to be added on, which was more size, and size is what you need when you're going against a lot of the bigger non-conference teams, we're faring well because we got players that are back playing positions that they played last year. So I think we'll be fine with the adjustment moving forward. And like I said, yeah, we do play a tough non-conference schedule. We had a chance to really do some things throughout the year. Like I said, not having that size, other teams were actually to exploit us more in the inside. But we had our chances, like you said, against La Tech, against Fordham, against USC. And we don't shy away from those type of teams. So I think it's going to help us even going into conference play.
Coach Murray, when you look at a couple of your players, Sha'Carri Hill, Jasmine Boyd, they played extremely well. Sha'Carri Hill, great game against Alabama State and A&M. And played well in that game against Southeast. Matter of fact, she had 24, if I'm not mistaken, against Southeast. But, you know, one of the things that's really been impressive so far is how you guys have really been able to, not necessarily you shut teams down, but you really start putting the clamps on them. Even if they're able to score, you guys are able to move the ball and really work your offense on the other end to get good shots.
Yeah, like I said, chemistry means a lot. Like I said, this team developed a lot of great chemistry last year. One of the areas that we knew coming into the season that we needed to improve on was rebounding and our defensive play. And so all throughout the summer going into the preseason, we really stressed defense. And like I said, that's an area that I can say that we've really improved in. We got to really have to, you know, rely on that phase of the game to really advance far into the conference. But like I said, the thing about it is that this team has played together last year, and so it's actually paying dividends more and more now. People are starting to really see that chemistry more and more.
Head Coach Freddie Murray of the Grambling State University women's basketball team joining us here on the Sports Beat, ESPN 97.7. In that first game in conference play, you play against defending champion Alabama State on the road on their floor. Very hard to beat them there, and you went in. And you were able to get a big win over Alabama State, 60-45. And being able to hold some of those players like Brittany Wright to just 9 points. She takes a lot of shots, took, I think, somewhere around 16, 17 shots in that game. And then being able to limit some of those other players like Daniel Clark and Shamiah Smith really said a lot about what you did defensively.
Yeah, that, you know, people don't know, but last year we went into the last game of the season tied, a four-way tie for first place, and that game was actually to determine who won the conference. It was against Alabama State on their home court. It was a hard-fought game that actually went down possibly to the last minute where Alabama State willed themselves to a win. We were able to go into the tournament, win a game, and meet them again in the semifinals of the SWAC championship last year, which was another barn burner that went down to the last couple of minutes. So our young ladies understood the moment. They understood, you know, coming up short last year, and that was their motivation going into the season. So I didn't have to say anything or coach them up any harder going into the Alabama State game. And it was just a kind of a they just kind of willed themselves to a win based on everything that happened last year. So this team is real resilient, and I have a great group of young ladies. And regardless of who the challenge is, like I said, we knew going in, you know, to be the best, you got to beat the best. And Alabama State was definitely that. My hat is off to them. Like I said, we'll see them again towards the end of the season, but I'm glad to get that first on the road.
The inside play, because I know you spoke about really the size in the middle and what you lost a little bit because academics at the beginning of the year. But you guys were able to get 32 points in the paint against an Alabama State team, which quite frankly has always carried some size, especially people like Danielle Ewert who goes inside and things like that.
Yeah, well, you know, quite frankly, you know, we're getting a lot of, because of not having the size inside, we're getting a lot of rebounding from our guard position, especially Sha'Carri Hill, who leads us in rebounding. So that's a plus when your starting point guard can lead you in rebounding. So it's a total team effort. We know that because us being small, that doesn't mean that we can't dominate the boards. We just have to do a better job of boxing out, being physical with teams, and it's paying off for us.
And then, of course, on last night, you beat Alabama A&M University 68-53. If it's not Sha'Carri Hill, it's Jasmine Boyd between her and Takara Parsons, both in double figures, 18 points for Boyd, 13 for Parsons. But more importantly, you guys were really able to defend the glass well once again.
Yeah. Like I said, that's something that we definitely you have to win the battle of the boards. You got to cut down on turnovers, and you got to make free throws. And those are some areas that we're really improving in. The scoring is going to come and go each night, so you have to find other ways to really put your mark on the team. And like I said, you mentioned Parsons, Takara Parsons. She's been a real asset to us the last few games. She broke into the starting lineup a few games ago. She's really playing well for us. And like I said, we just continuing to play for each other. We understand each game is going to be a battle. Each and every night is going to pose a different set of circumstances that we're going to have to deal with. But if we can control the things that we are focusing on day in and day out, I think we'll be fine.
One other thing, Coach, I want to talk about here, and that's, of course, Southern University. Big weekend coming up. Saturday, Southern, and then Monday against Alcorn State. Always a big game with Southern University. Sandy Pugh, year in and year out, they've been carrying some very talented individuals. When you look at their film and what they bring to the table, what do you see?
Sandy's going to always – I've been fortunate to play Sandy and have played her for well over 17 years. So I'm familiar with what Southern is going to bring to the table. They're going to be gritty. They're going to be tough. They're going to fight you tooth and nails from start to finish. We predict another battle. Like I said, that's an in-state rivalry game. Again, you throw records out the door. It's just telling you just who wants it the most out there on the court. Like I said, I like our chances against them. Alcorn is they haven't won many games, but they've been very, very impressive on film. And like I said, we had a chance to play against them last year and split with them last year. So we're expecting these next two games not to be any easier than the two games that we played earlier. Every game that we play is going to be a tough game, and we're approaching it that way.
Overall, when you look at this conference, especially some of the non-conference games, and had a few coaching changes throughout the conference, when you look at this conference this year, is it just really the same old gritty, tough conference to play in? Have there been some things that have changed just a little bit?
Well, a lot of coaches are coming in, very knowledgeable coaches that are actually doing a great job in the conference with Prairie View, with Mississippi Valley. Texas Southern has reloaded again. Arkansas Pine Bluff is going to be strong. Like I said, from top to bottom, the parity in the conference is real good. Like I said, so you can't count anybody out any night. Like I said, SWAC a lot of times doesn't get the credit that it deserves, but I think we've shown throughout the season this year and with some wins against some formidable opponents that SWAC can play women's basketball at a high level. So I expect that to be the case all the way down the stretch through March.
New tournament, of course, new tournament format where only four teams on the men's side and the women's side will go to the Toyota Center, and that means it's a little bit harder now to get to Houston.
Yeah, a lot harder. You want to be in one of the top four so you can actually host, mm-hmm. Host a game, and that's what our goal is right now. No particular position. As long as we're in the top four, I think we can kind of control our destiny. But that's our goal, has been our goal ever since, you know, the word came out about the new format. So that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to take each and every game as it is and try to position ourselves to be in the top third of the conference at the end.
Well, Coach, we appreciate you joining us this weekend. Grambling will play Southern. We'll have the women's game on redpeachradio.com, live on the stream, so people will be able to hear it. And, Coach, good luck this weekend against those Lady Jags.
Thank you, Santori. I really appreciate it, man. And Happy New Year to you.
You too, sir. All right, Freddie Murray, head coach at Grambling State University, women's basketball. They play Southern this weekend, 3 o'clock at the Frederick C. Hobby Assembly Center. The men will play at 5:30. And I want to just add to this, the men come in 1-1 in conference play, splitting with A&M and Alabama State. Close game with Alabama State on the road. And if this is any indication of how this team has improved, you could see a very different team that could possibly get into that top eight and even top four. Remember, only the top eight get to the tournament this year. Top four will host a first-round game. We're going to take a timeout when we come back. Terry Waldrop on the other side talking recruiting, as this is a very crucial time of the year for coaches in football and other sports as well. We'll take this timeout. We'll be right back here on the Sports Beat, ESPN 97.7.
Are you ready to sell your home, land, or commercial property? Then call Coldwell Banker Group 1 Realty. Your listing's on hundreds of the best websites in the country. A video tour of most listings. The number one most visited real estate brand online. 73% more transactions than our nearest competitor over the past 10 years. 110 professional realtors cover 17 parishes. We advertise in local media, too. Call Coldwell Banker Group 1 Realty in Monroe, 361-0300. West Monroe, 362-0007. Buston, 255-5302. Each office independently owned and operated.
Legal matters are serious business. Don't take the law into your own hands. Trust the professionals at the offices of attorney and counselor at law Ivan J. Diggs. With over 20 years of experience in law, attorney Diggs can help you battle the big companies as well as represent you in accidents. Don't take the law into your own hands. Trust the professionals at attorney Ivan J. Diggs, attorney and counselor at law, located at 309 South Bonner Street in Ruston. Give him a call at 318-254-0400. That's 318-254-0400.
Welcome back to the Sports Beat on ESPN 97.7 and ESPN97.7.com. Text your questions in at 888-993-7762. Now back to your host, Santoria Black.
All right, back here on the Sports Beat, ESPN 97.7, where we try to stay out of trouble once in a while. Well, I try. That's all I can tell you. In the new year, my goal is to try to stay out of trouble, not to step on as many toes. And, you know, that probably will last a week or so. Terry Waldrop joining us here on the Sports Beat, ESPN 97.7, gracing our airwaves to talk recruiting. Big time of the year. Terry, thanks for joining us.
Well, if you're trying to stay out of trouble, you're talking to the wrong person.
Well, like I said, it may last a week, a few days, doesn't matter. At least I tried.
I appreciate you having me.
Absolutely. Terry, with this time of the year, looking at recruiting, big time of the year, especially football, the dead period, I believe, is now over with. You've got student-athletes who will start visiting schools, going to, you know, maybe see some of the basketball games, things like that. You also have basketball teams who are going to be looking at players and the whole nine yards. This is really, especially for football, such a crucial time of the year with recruiting. And I guess let's start here. For people who really don't understand the role that coaches have and the arduous process of recruiting, talk a little bit, if you could, and give a summation about just how recruiting really operates.
Well, that's like giving a synopsis of the Bible. in essence, Centauri, recruiting is the ability to stack players, student athletes, on your particular squad that you want. And it's like anything else. You know, if you're ULM or Louisiana Tech or Grambling or UConn, you have players that you would like to have in your program. Well, obviously, other people want those players too. So the recruiting is a fishing expedition. You know, right now you mentioned football. Recruiting never stops.
Right.
There's really no downtime to it. You're identifying kids that are going to be sophomores, they're going to be juniors. Basketball, they're recruiting for the spring class coming up. So they're in the middle of the season, and they're trying to recruit for next year. Football, you've already had that signing period, and so or you have one coming up. So it's an ongoing process. I think a lot of times people think it's just like a two-week process or a very furious period, and it's so much more than that. It's like you know, it's like baking a cake. There's so many things that go into that process, and at the end of the day, you have a nice piece of cake, and it's really good, but you got no idea what went into make that so good.
You look at the percentage of student-athletes who are in high school that will actually be on college rosters, and then you look at those who will be on college rosters that will actually be able to play on a Division I level, and the percentages go from outrageous to very minute. This is a something that, you know, players, you know, all parents think, you know, hey, I think that my player can get on a team, you know, whether it's a men's team or a women's team or whatever the case is. But the truth of the matter is that while there are scholarships available and spots on a lot of different teams on different levels, whether it's NAIA or any of the divisions in NC2A, the fact of the matter is that in order to play on a very high level like Division I, especially when you're looking at how that's, you know, some of these sports are headcount sports, it becomes even more difficult, and the process, it becomes even more stingy when you're talking about recruiting dollars.
Oh, absolutely. You're talking about extreme talent level. There's so many different levels of play, and I think people, and I know I grew up in this area, so I can speak to that. You know, you have Division I here. People have heard of junior colleges, although we don't really have a lot of junior colleges. No junior college football in the state, but you have some junior college basketball in Shreveport, Baton Rouge, and New Orleans. But strong junior college programs in basketball in Mississippi and certainly in Texas. Division III schools, there are several of those, NAI schools. But we in this area get so ingrained into just understanding Division I. And you mentioned a minute ago, there's so few kids that get the opportunity to participate in Division I. The talent level is a lot better than what anybody recognizes. The academic stress is a lot greater than what anybody recognizes. And, you know, most of the really good Division I players that are coming out, they've been targeted since junior high in terms of their academics, in terms of their athletics. So there's sort of a two-course train, if you will. It doesn't matter how good, how talented you are. You have to be able to have the academic house in order, and you also have to have the athletic house in order. And if you miss either one of those, it's not going to work out.
And yeah, Terry Waldrop joining us here on the Sports Beat, ESPN 97.7. I want to add here a little bit. There are more student athletes participating in Division III schools than there is in Division I. And you may think that that's not true, but when you go to the NC2A manual, the latest manual information that was out, about 187,188 student athletes were participating in 439 colleges and universities. While you look at Division I, you got about 176,000 student athletes playing at about 346 colleges and universities. And the numbers are even lower in Division II, where you think they may be a little higher. That's actually the lowest of the three, where you have about 119,000 student athletes playing in just over 300 colleges and universities.
Well, you know, the stats that I want to throw out, there are 100 times more dollars given out in terms of scholarships and award monies in academics than there ever are in athletics.
Yeah.
So the one thing I would always encourage people, you know, spend time on your children's academics, the tutoring, test prep, et cetera. You know, the Division I, you know, the full ride scholarship, quote unquote, which is the headcount stuff. You know, does it happen? Yes. But it's tremendously more rare than what people think that it is. There are some great levels of sports played all across the country. Division III, you'll have some Division I players in Division III because it fits better. Typically, Division III is are more academically inclined. There's no athletic scholarship, but they have scholarships for academics. They have need-based stuff. They have other leadership. There's so many other areas of which you can get money, and what you're trying to do is just reduce your bill to get a higher education, and that's the goal for all of us.
Yeah, absolutely. You spoke about that, and I was thinking about the percentage of student athletes that are getting some type of academic grant or, as you said, need-based scholarship, and it's 82% in Division III compared to just 56% in Division I. So, I mean, just use that as a benchmark to really determine if your student athlete, and again, the some of these individuals that will get a chance to go to Division I schools, it does not mean that you will get a full scholarship. Even with headcount sports, they can give you partial scholarships based on that institution's budget.
Right. You know, you get into football and men's basketball, those are the big money sports. Those, by definition, in Division I have to be a full scholarship or nothing. You can't get parts on that. Now, Division II, NAIA, junior college, absolutely. A lot of the equivalency sports, you know, baseball, things of that nature, they can give you a full. Very rare that they do. But you just got to educate yourself on that process because you're dealing with NCAA schools at the Division I, II, and III level. You're dealing with junior college at the Division I, II, and III level. And NAIA at the Division I and II level. So there's a bunch of different areas that people can play. I would encourage them to explore all of them. You know, do the questionnaires if you get those from different coaches. Because athletics, you know, I talked about this earlier, Sam, it's big business because the rosters of so many of these programs are filling the coffers of the institutions. In other words, they need athletics, they need the students, they need the student money in order to operate. It's sort of like going to McDonald's and I give you a French fry coupon. And a lot of schools operate like this. I'll give you a French fry coupon, you go get free fries, but you have to buy the soda, you have to buy the burger and the apple pie. And that's what entices you to go there. But at the end of the day, you're trying to get your education, and what a great experience college athletics is. We get so caught up on, you know, Alabama-Clemson on Monday night. There's so few rare players that get that opportunity. And I think sometimes people miss that point because you have some great opportunities just around here. I mean, you look at what Grambling did this year.
Mm-hmm.
What, they lose one game on the whole year? Is that right?
That's it. Lost Arizona.
Yeah. I mean, you think anybody had a better experience than those kids this year? They went 11-1, won a bowl game. I mean, that's an incredible experience for anybody at any level. So, again, appreciating the levels that you're at. When you're winning, dude, you're winning.
Yeah.
And that's a good thing. You can be 0-11 somewhere else and playing in the nicest places in America. It's not a whole lot of fun.
Yeah, you know, you bring that up, and I think that what's really interesting is, and we talk about the recruiting process here with Terry Waldrop on the Sports Beat here, ESPN 97.7. When kids are getting letters in the mail, because we, you know, high school kids love getting mail, not just emails, but actually mail, text messages from coaches and things like that. But what's really interesting is I think at some point in time, parents need to have a realistic self-conversation about what the real goal is for this student athlete. Is it to say that, okay, that they went to Alabama and they may have sat 2 or 3 years to possibly play their fourth, or is this student athlete really wanting to play his first year? And if they are, they may have to go to another school to ensure that. Sometimes I think that the hype of going to a Power 5 school clouds the judgment of whether or not it is the best fit, not only from an academic standpoint, which is the most important, but on the playing field as well. Some of these kids have to sit a couple years before they even see the playing field, and that means that they're playing a lot of scout team and all that kind of stuff. And so sometimes I think it's just realistic for them to say, hey, let me not waste a year or two and say, hey, maybe I need to go to another school that's going to be able to fit my needs right now.
Well, you know, 2 points to that. Number one, let me give you an example if you're being recruited or not. If you're wondering if you're being recruited, a lot of letters go out, folks. It's called mail merge.
Yep.
Done by everybody in the country.
Yep.
The definition of being recruited, if that head coach comes and sits in your living room with your child, they're recruiting you.
Yep.
Bottom line, especially football and basketball, because it's a priority process. If the assistant comes, they're recruiting you a little bit. The head coach has to come and sit in your living room. They're recruiting you. The second part of that is every kid at a Power 5 school typically was the best player on their high school team.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you look at Alabama, you want to see what 6 years of number one recruiting classes look like. They got 80 kids rated 4- and 5-star athletes on that team. You got kids that are 5 stars that never play but on kickoff teams. And so you're stockpiling talent. It's the success. The recruiting is the lifeblood of any program. You know, you look at the quarterback that Grambling brought in from Ole Miss.
Yeah.
You talk about jumpstart. I mean, they were already good, but that guy put them over the top, in my opinion.
Devontae Kincaid.
And you covered that a lot more than I did. But, you know, you get dynamic guys like that, all of a sudden it makes your really good players even better, and that builds you for that next year. So now people that are looking around going, you know what, I went to a Power 5. It's not exactly working out. I want a chance to go play and have a great experience. Now all of a sudden they're on the radar because of that young man. And that's the way that process works at every level, in especially football and basketball. But it's just, you know, I would encourage people, and I've been on Facebook about this. I've had 3 or 4 people talk to me the last about week or so. You have to educate yourself to the process of what recruiting is, because, Sam, the majority of people, it's like maybe medicine. You sort of think you have an idea because you Googled it, but that really doesn't break it down. Recruiting is scientific. It's a business. There's no accidents that happen. You know, a lot of people get mad at their high school coach or their AAU coach because they're not being recruited. a lot of these events that they have. AAU in basketball is a great event. It's also a horrible event.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes you get exposed, and you don't need to be exposed because they're seeing the wrong thing. So I would encourage you, take care of the academic side of the shop. That's the first and foremost. And then as you get better and your skills improve, then you're worried about the recruiting aspect of it. Be the best player you can be. Most of it will take care of itself.
You know, and I want to bring up this point before I let you go, Terry. You speak about teams and their dominance and what they can really do in their particular division. I'm going to take a school like the University of Wisconsin-Whitewater. Everybody's going to say, oh, Wisconsin, whatever. Let's just tell you about University of Wisconsin-Whitewater. 2007, 9, 10, 11, 13, and 14, they won national football championships in Division III. In 2014, they became the first school in any division to win men's basketball, men's baseball, and a football national championship in the same year. So it doesn't matter sometimes how big the school is. When you can do something like that on a national scale, your program is doing pretty good.
Well, Sam, how do you think those kids are going to feel 10 years from now, 20 years now, when that school invites them to come back as alumni?
Huge.
Donate.
Oh.
You know, it's like the guys at Grambling this year. I promise you, their donations, their alumni donations, are going to be through the roof this year because they went 11-1. Should have been. If the kid hadn't got hurt, they beat Arizona. They ended up going undefeated. And people want to be associated with winning programs. Winning players gets you more winning players, and that ball keeps rolling. Also, the opposite is true as well. When you start losing, it's a very quick fall to the basement. But again, it's about players. It's about the marketability. It is about kids getting their education and having an opportunity to play for championships. That was always our big pitch. And you mentioned Wisconsin-Whitewater. You know, nobody's ever heard of them probably here. You're from Wisconsin. You heard of them. I know who they are. But people are going, who? Yeah, they won a national championship. You walk in with a rock on your finger, all of a sudden people are, like, paying attention to it. And, you know, we would tell people this. I mean, would you rather go win 3 games a year or would you rather come here and have a chance to play for a national championship? You know, win 25 games a year and minimum probably make the Elite Eight.
Absolutely.
Winning is winning, man. Winning is winning.
Terry, we appreciate you starting off our recruiting conversation, man. We hope that through this conversation and education that we can help people understand the recruiting process and even maybe educate a few people as well.
Hey, and myself included. Thanks for having me, Stan. Always a pleasure, my friend.
Thanks. Terry Waldrop joining us. ESPN 97.7, real nice. Did the Big Ten win a bowl? Yes, we won a bowl game. Wisconsin won a bowl game. Petty. Wow. I love the listeners. Yes, Wisconsin won a bowl game. Let me see who else won a bowl game. And that's all I got for you. Oh, Minnesota. I think we won 2 or 3 bowl games this season. Let me be the first to say, as someone from the Big Ten area, it sucked. I'm just glad Wisconsin won their game. The Big Ten did not do well this year in the bowl. Great in the regular season. Overall, fantastic season for the Big Ten. When it came down to the bowls, though, you had a close game with Michigan. Let's not even talk about Ohio State there. I mean, there are people in the Big Ten that say you got to revoke their card for a year after that performance. But anyway, got to take a break. When we come back, more here on the Sports Beat, we'll hear a little bit of that interview from Greg Peterson from DudesOnSports.com. Talk a little bit about NC2A men's basketball. That's coming up next right here on ESPN 97.7.
Legal matters are serious business. Don't take the law into your own hands. Trust the professionals at the offices of attorney and counselor at law Ivan J. Diggs. With over 20 years of experience in law, Attorney Diggs can help you battle the big companies as well as represent you in accidents. Don't take the law into your own hands. Trust the professionals at attorney Ivan J. Diggs, attorney and counselor at law, located at 309 South Bonner Street in Ruston. Give him a call at 318-254-0400. That's 318-254-0400.
Do you play sports? Do you work outside? Do you walk? Do you jog? Do you cut grass? Do you have activity that causes you to sweat?
And when you sweat, you dehydrate. When we dehydrate, usually we reach for a bottle of water, but now reach for more. Proper hydration is important to your health year-round. When you work, play, or travel, don't settle for whatever is available. You deserve the best high-alkaline, mineral-enhanced bottled water available. Extreme pH Sports Water. Extreme pH Sports Water contains no dyes, no sugars, no caffeine, no sweeteners, no artificial flavoring. Extreme pH Sports Water is simply the best high-alkaline mineral-enhanced bottled water you can find. Rehydrate with a great taste. Extreme pH Sports Water contains a plant-derived mixture of calcium, magnesium, and potassium. Now you can rehydrate with a great taste with Extreme pH Sports Water. Extreme pH Sports Water, available at Walmart and other stores near you.
Welcome back to the Sports Beat here on ESPN 97.7. Santoria Black here with you on this Thursday evening. Glad you could join us. We're now joined by Greg Peterson from DudesOnSports.com. He talks about NC2A and bracketology and the whole nine yards. And so, Greg, thank you for joining us here this evening.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. It's a great time of year. Conference play is starting up in college basketball. I'm still fired up for it.
Well, you know what, Greg? You look at some of these teams early on and some of the mega matches that have happened already, and you've got some teams that traditionally you see in the top five with Duke and Kentucky. But some of those teams have already lost, but they've lost some big-time games. How is this going to shape up for them as they get ready for conference season?
Well, you take a look at some of these teams. They just had some unfortunate stumbles. You take a look at Indiana. They were a top five team at one point after they knocked off Kansas in that season opener. Then they go on the road and they lose to Fort Wayne, which is a very befuddling loss. Looks like they're about to find their way. Then they take another bad loss to Nebraska. So that's just one of those things where you don't know how that's going to go. And then Oregon at the beginning of the year was also a top five team. They stumbled down to, I believe they were number 21 coming into this week, though they should be rising after their win against UCLA. They were just hit by the injury bug.
You know,
you take a look at Dylan Brooks. Dylan Brooks was injured at the beginning of the year. He was such a good scorer for this team. And then he goes out with an injury. He has to come off the bench for the first 10 games. They were without Chris Boucher for a while. So they lost to Baylor, who turned out to not be a bad loss. So many people, I am right here in Portland, Oregon, they thought that the Oregon loss to Baylor was bad. Turns out not so bad after all, as Baylor is currently undefeated and a top five team themselves. But their loss to Georgetown really looming large, but seems like they have found their way as they've gotten a lot healthier recently.
You know, Greg, what's really interesting is that with conference season here, you talked about that Oregon win against UCLA. And although both teams are in the top 25, it's a big win for them because it is a conference win. And at the end of the season, when you get ready for your tournament play, that's how you're going to get seeded with the wins and the losses. But, you know, from an overall standpoint, even though it's a big conference win early, how big is that win against the number two team in the nation in UCLA?
Absolutely monumental, because Oregon is actually going to be facing another undefeated team tomorrow. There were six teams in the NCAA tournament that were entering this week undefeated. Oregon had to go against two of them, and USC and UCLA. They were able to get the win against UCLA, which many people did not think they were going to. Now they've got a shot to do it twice in the same week with USC coming to town tomorrow. So it is huge for them. And it just helps out their psyche in general, because when you lose to a team like Georgetown, who is underachieving once again this year, it really hurts you, because this is a team that they thought was going to be playing Wisconsin in the Maui Invitational in a Titanic clash. And they had lost to Wisconsin in two of the last three NCAA tournaments. They were looking to seek revenge. When they lost to Georgetown, they forfeited that chance. So to be able to get a big win against a top-five team, the way that they did with Dylan Brooks hitting that buzzer beater, absolutely huge for the Ducks.
Greg Peterson joining us from DudesOnSports.com, talking about college basketball as we get ready for the conference season. Let's talk about the SEC with Kentucky, of course, with two losses already. Two of the losses, when you think about it, especially one with UCLA, not a bad loss. But then the loss to Louisville, 73-70. Now you get ready to go into conference play against Ole Miss. They're not going to be as probably high next week when the brackets come out. But that was a big loss against Louisville.
It was, but it's not necessarily the world's worst loss. And I believe that they actually did know the ranking that Kentucky is at right now is noted with that loss. So they're actually not going to be falling too far as long as they can take care of business against Ole Miss. But it is clear that Kentucky is the class of the SEC. Just seems like a down year in general for the SEC. Although a very interesting note is that coming into the week, Florida was number two overall in terms of ratings percent index, which you may know as RPI. That pretty much takes your win percentage, your strength of schedule and the strength of schedule of the opponents that you've played. And Florida has lost to some really good teams. They had to go up against Duke. They lost that game. They were in the Advocare Invitational. They had a very hard-fought loss against Gonzaga, so they really challenged themselves. And many people are thinking that Florida might be that second-best team out there in the SEC. We will see about that. But right now, despite the fact that they're young and a little bit inexperienced, Kentucky, led by Malik Monk, is by far the best team out there in the conference.
Yeah, no question. You talked about Florida, and even though with those two losses they had back-to-back with Duke and Florida State, they got back on the winning track by winning against Charlotte and UALR. But they start the season, the conference season, at Arkansas, who, if I'm not mistaken, is 11-1 coming into this week.
Yes, they are. And Arkansas has had a really good run of things themselves. They had a nice win against UT Arlington earlier this year. They played a really good match against Minnesota as well, who turns out to be a really good surprise themselves. They enter Big Ten play with just one loss as well. You take a look at Arkansas, Moses Kingsley, really good player for Arkansas. He's a beast of a big man and could be a candidate for the first-team All-SEC Awards when it's all said and done. They've also got some good guard play by committee. So I take a look at Arkansas. They underachieved badly last year. They were right around 500. Did not get invited to a postseason tournament after they were a five seed in the dance in 2015. It looks like they are heading in the right direction. Mike Anderson, a very good head coach for this team. I think that Arkansas is another team that I would not be surprised to see in the NCAA tournament as well. When my bracket comes out on Friday, Arkansas will be in it.
How good is this South Carolina team? They haven't had the same type of schedule as your Kentucky's had, but they have played Michigan, got a win there. They got a win against Syracuse. Difficult loss against Seton Hall and then another one against Clemson. They finish up the non-conference season, I believe, on the 30th against Memphis on the road, which they had a monumental game against SMU night before last. How good is this South Carolina team?
They are good when they are whole, but those two losses that you noted against Seton Hall and Clemson, they did not have their best player in Sindarius Thornwell. I mean, without Thornwell, this team just really is not complete because he is their best scorer. He's one of their best rebounders. I believe that he leads the team in assists as well. Guy does a little bit of everything. He's a senior leader, 6'6", just a matchup nightmare for teams. And not having him in, you can tell that South Carolina really took a step back. I mean, you have Notice out there. He's doing a good job for them. He's giving them some quality buckets and everything. But South Carolina just really needs to get Thornwell back. He has been suspended indefinitely by Frank Martin. I know that there was a report that in the offseason he was caught while in possession of marijuana, I believe it was. So it is unclear when he's going to be returning to the court, or if he will. So if they can get Thornwell back, South Carolina can certainly be a top 25 team like we saw earlier this year. Without him, they're a fringe NCAA tournament team at best, unfortunately.
Greg Peterson from DudesOnSports.com talking about college basketball. We now move to the LSU Tigers. You know, you look at last year's team, which, you know, a lot of people were very disappointed that Johnny Jones' team severely underperformed. They come in this year, got a few losses already, Wichita, VCU, and against Wake Forest. But now you get ready for their conference play. They don't have any more non-conference games. They started against Vanderbilt, who I think is right at 500, Missouri, which I think is like right at or one game below 500. But you don't play really a 500 team or a team that really has a good record coming into the conference season until January the 7th when they take on Mississippi State and Baton Rouge.
And what's helping them is the fact that that their portion of the SEC just really not firepower right now, to say the least. I mean, the SEC East is where really the best teams reign in college basketball, which is the exact opposite of football. So LSU should be able to pick up a couple wins. As you noted, Vanderbilt really struggling badly. They lost on their home floor to Patriot League foe Bucknell earlier
wow.
this year. They also got crushed by 25 points to Middle Tennessee State. I know that game was in Murfreesboro, but if you're Vanderbilt, you should be embarrassed that you lost to Middle Tennessee State by 25 points. I mean, that should be an easy win for them. Missouri is a team that just has not been good since Kim Anderson took over that program. In their first 2 years entering this year, they had a total of 19 total wins. So, I mean, it is just one of those things where LSU, they've had some bad results. They got absolutely crushed by Wichita State earlier this year, but it all counts as just one loss. I mean, you can lose by 30, you can lose by 2. It's all going to count pretty much the same when it's all said and done. They just need to pick up some wins. The schedule is very favorable for them. If they can just take care of business, maybe get a big win or two as the season goes along, they'll be right there on the NCAA tournament bubble.
Greg, one team that I saw this year, they played against Grambling State University, and then I saw them on television, is Kent State. Probably one of those teams, when you start looking at selection, when the selections come out, if they can take care of business in their conference in the MAC, this is a team that has a quality win on the road against Texas, which is in Austin. And although Texas, you know, not as good right now, still a Big 12 opponent, still is going to expect it to try to contend, that is a pretty good win to go on the road to get.
It really is. And Kent State is a team that is no stranger to the NCAA tournament. You may remember in 2002, they made the Elite Eight back when they were led by none other than San Diego Chargers tight end Antonio Gates. They've got some really good players on this team because, I mean, I had the chance to actually watch them when they played against Oregon State. They did not pull out the win that night, but at the same time, they do have a couple guys that can score right around 15 to 20 points. But the MAC is actually a pretty good conference. You take a look at Central Michigan, they have the leading scorer in the nation on their squad. He's averaging right around 30 points per game. The guy is just absolutely insane. And then you take a look at Ohio. The Bobcats nearly made the Elite Eight themselves a couple years ago. You may recall in 2012, they went to overtime with North Carolina in the Sweet 16, just couldn't quite pull it out. They seem to be really on the uptick as well. Buffalo has run that conference each of the last 2 years, but it appears as though they are very far down as they are still recovering from the loss of head coach Bobby Hurley going to Arizona State. Kent State is going to have some stiff competition in the MAC, but if they can make the NCAA tournament, who knows, maybe perhaps they could be this year's Arkansas Little Rock. Maybe they could pull an upset like Middle Tennessee State did. Maybe they can be that Harvard who was able to win as a 14 seed a couple years back against New Mexico. Anything can happen as long as you can get into the dance.
All right, that's Greg Peterson from DudesOnSports.com talking a little college basketball. Got to get out of here. Remember, next week we move to Wednesday, 6 p.m. right here, ESPN 97.7. Kendrick, thanks for running the ones and twos on the other side. Lady Texter basketball coming up 7:30 as they'll play against UTEP on the road in El Paso. Men's game is on our sister station, Z107.5, as they play against UTEP in Ruston. We'll see you coming up next week right here on the Sports Beat, ESPN 97.7.
Thanks for listening to the Sports Beat with Centoria Black. Tune in live every week at ESPN977.com or subscribe to the show in iTunes, on Stitcher, or at RedPeachSports.com.